Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
We stay the course. We are dead. We are all dead.
We're supposed to make the world a better place. What happened?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I know kung fu.
You either die a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
This whole thing is insane. This whole thing is insane.
300 years ago, you'd have been burned at the stake.
What do all men of power want? More power.
This is now the United States of Zombieland.
This whole thing is insane!
Man is evil, capable of nothing but destruction!
Everybody is stuck with the things that they're not proud of.
More power.
Welcome to the desert. Of the real.
More power.
There can be only one.
Are you a God-fearing man, Senator?
That's such a strange phrase.
I've always thought of God as a teacher, as a bringer of light, wisdom, and understanding. You see, I think what you really are afraid of is me.
Happy heresies, and welcome to the desert of the real. Heresy shouldn't be this much fun, but it just is. It just is. Especially when you get the audio version of AB Live. This one, episode 52. Raw, uncensored, and unfiltered. Just like the truth you've been looking for across all your existences. Supercharged by stellar audience participation. We were joined by Scott Smith and David Hyatt Bickle, two individuals who know their ancient and modern Gnosticism. Why should we care about some ancient mystics crushed under the jackboot of orthodoxy? The answer is in the question. Their liberating ideas were too dangerous for civilizations that denied individuality and spiritual freedom. We combed through various Gnostic sects for insights more relevant than ever in a culture collapsing under the dark spell of Archons. As a bonus for patrons and AB Prime members, I'll include our interview with Mark Gaffney, author of Gnostic Secrets of the Nessines. Along with the Ophites and other groups, the Nassines were part of the serpent-worshipping Gnostic sect. We delve into the mysticism of the dangerous serpent worshippers, understanding how their forbidden message is also relevant today. A truly mind-blowing interview. I'm so grateful to those who support this Red Pill Cafeteria. And I hope I have been a good servant of Sophia to you. Your support and company keep me going. Don't forget the Finding Hermes program and my voiceover availability. Whether it's an audiobook, commercial, podcast, video game, or any type of audio broadcast, I can bring starry results to your project. As mentioned in the interview, you can now tip via Stripe, since many of you use it, found in the show notes of any audio podcast. And you can join the simple but effective Red Circle RSS feed that works in the podcast provider of your choice. This will give you all full shows and bonuses. We need Gnosis more than ever, needless to say. You won't find this high-quality Gnostic and Hermetic wisdom, or guests and their unique insights, anywhere else in cyberspace or even meat space. Enough of my short drivel. Let us to our latest AB Live. Write your own gospel, live your own myth, even as the empire never ended. And we are live. Welcome to the Desert of the Real. Welcome to Aeon Byte, specifically AB Live. Here, yes, we live in a world where men still have nipples and Birdie Num Num, Peter Sellers, is still wearing brown face in the party. But Peter Sellers is the greatest actor of all times. I mean, I think... what he did in Doctor Strangelove is unparalleled, and no actor could have matched it. And I always think that Peter Sellers in the Pink Panther single-handedly destroyed French culture. It went from the French were the most noble and sophisticated to they were bumbling and fools, and they never recovered. But it's what is in my head. The mind forged manacles of Blake and the fantasies and narratives I like to put in my head. And I hope your fantasies and narratives are just as rewarding and enriching. So great to have everybody here. And let's see, we got people starting to go into the chat room. As always, you know the drill. Good to see you, occult fan, Jasmine, Trash Pope, Gnostic Anarchist, and everybody else. But if you have questions today, you know the drill. If you do a super chat, you will definitely have your question answered. If you have a question, anywho, please type it in all caps or put a lot of question marks so Vance can get to them. And we will get to them, and it's a very exciting show. As one of the taglines for Aeon Byte, and I tend to not use it as often as I can, but it is in the website, is bringing modern meaning from ancient mysteries, or from ancient mysteries to modern connections. And many of us feel there must be some way out of here, like the Joker and the Thief, but we also feel very strongly that there is still a lot of value in the ancient ideas of the Gnostics or the classical Gnostics from those early times and throughout history. Valuable ideas, and as I say, these are Gnostic times, and their ideas seem to resonate even better as we live in this simulation, this shadowy time, the surveillance state where this wickedness in high places seems to be pulling the strings, and humanity seems to be collapsing more and more into ignorance. So that will be the theme today, and I hope it is rewarding to all of you here at the virtual Alexandria. So with us today, we've got Scott Smith, and he seems to have a vacuum cleaner somewhere in the background, if I can hear it. But Scott, the usual Scott fan. And most of the audience knows who you are. You've been a reoccurring guest. It's always fun having you. It's always a blast doing the Halloween special, but it's been, 2014 since you came out with God Reconsidered, right?
Right.
And
we've done Halloween ever since, and the Sacred Cows 2 is coming up.
That is true. So when are you going to give us a new book? I keep thinking you're going to release the Gnosis of Kamala Harris, or I was secretly a Trump supporter this whole time, or something like that, Scott.
Well, I actually wrote a 10,000-word blog called My Adventures in Journalism just to get on coast to coast again. I've got my 7th interview coming up on Wednesday the 16th. It's just a news hook to take advantage of the UFO brouhaha. So that's got to be my book for the moment. And it has a lot about UFOs, Aeon Byte, and paranormal and all that other weird stuff. And incidentally, that was the coolest intro video I have ever seen. So I think you should stick with it for a time or two.
It's the AB Live intro, that's for sure. And some things I need to tweak. If anybody's interested in the music, it is from the Battlestar Galactica TV series, the latest reboot. So the soundtrack is just very good. And of course, Scott will know that the creator were Mormons, and it's supposed to be this metaphor of the Mormons going to the promised land or whatever the hell.
Well, it makes us look respectable.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Awesome. And with us, we've got David Hyatt. I'm sorry, is it Bickle or Bickel?
Bickle.
Bickle. Well, David it's all right. Well, it's awesome to have you here for the first time. Why don't you tell the audience briefly about yourself or how you became interested in these ancient heretics, the Gnostics?
All right. I'm one of the moderators of the Facebook group called Christian Gnosticism, and you wrote that analysis and critique of Jay Mears debate with Scott Smith in 2019, which Scott really appreciated, and it took me hours upon hours to do, but it's totally worth it. I'm also a poet and an author. What else? Oh, yeah, and I have a YouTube channel called Valentinus777, where I do mainly Manichaean scriptures. And now that's how I'm going to move on to how I became a Gnostic.
Yeah.
Originally, when I was 12, when I began interested in religion, I went to mainly...
David, I'm sorry to interrupt. Could you speak up just a little bit? The audience says you're a little faded compared to the rest of us.
Oh, okay. I tried to
speak. Or come a little closer to the mic.
Yeah. Originally, I was part of mainstream Christianity when I was about 12 and 13, because I felt a calling, a spiritual calling. So I decided to go towards that. But over time, it just became really spiritually dry. It, for me, it just seems to be all dogmas and little to do with everyday life, going to church every week, repeating the Nicene Creed, you know, that kind of stuff. And I came up with some questions like, how could Adam and Eve be held morally accountable in the tree from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, since they didn't know the difference between good and evil before they ate the fruit, and other questions like that. So I moved to the New Age movement, because at the time I thought that was the more logical thing, so I moved to that, which worked for a time. But what happened was that I felt really dissatisfied as well, but in a different way. And during that time, I was studying many, many religions, and I wanted to find which one makes the most sense. And eventually I found Gnostic Christianity, since I was interested in early Christianity, which made a ton of sense to me and it utterly fascinated me. And I realized that mainstream Christianity was missing the divine wisdom called Sophia, and the New Age movement was missing the Logos, divine reason. Sophia is more about meditation, you know, healing, that kind of stuff. And the Logos is more book knowledge, ritual. Yeah, rituals, religious scriptures, theology. And I think Gnostic Christianity really came through that it has both of these qualities that I think mainstream Christianity and the New Age movement were both missing. And also Gnostic Christianity answered a lot of my questions, such as about Adam and Eve. And I realized that that story was more about the demiurge trying to keep Adam and Eve in spiritual ignorance, and also it solves the problem of evil, which is one of my biggest gripes with the religion. And thus, the Christian answered that this world isn't created and isn't controlled by the true God, but by the demiurge, by an evil God. So that really satisfied me, and yeah, that's basically where I've been since.
Awesome, and thanks for sharing. And we've got the Moondog Vance. Vance, how are you doing today on this Saturn day?
Oh, not too bad for a Saturn day, sitting here waiting for the festivities to continue.
Well, let's do it, man. Talking about festivities, it's like I was thinking 3 months ago I'd walk out and it was a foot of snow minus 10. Now today it's in the 90s and it is brutal heat. You can feel it through the wall. So love how the Midwest has such an extreme in weather. I'd go to California, but then it's California, right?
Yeah.
It's got all this
California.
Yeah, but when it pours, man, it pours. Oh boy.
But we have wildfires.
Yeah, that is true. Rolling blackouts, Newsom, all that good stuff. Oh boy. Awesome. And for a little housekeeping, for the audience, please don't forget that I am now on Rockfin and Odyssey. This show will be uploaded or will appear in both places and in their entireties. That's because some people like to, provide assistance or support with crypto in other ways, and this is an option. And to be honest, these places are much better when it comes to free speech. God knows when YouTube will come down hard on all of us. I already have a strike. I think one more strike and I'm done. So I gotta watch out what I say. Nobody say that virus thingy or anything like that, because you never know. But please, and you see the ticker right now, you've got Rockfin and Odyssey if you want to go there. Don't forget, we do have the merch store. I'm going to try to do a screen share. Share screen. Oh my God, I'm getting all these instructions about the screen share. Do, share. All right. Do you guys see the screen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. But for some reason, I can't get my own. Yeah, that's my desktop. Where is it? Okay. Now I've got my folder. Now I've got my Outlook. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's not working at all with my thing. All right. Well, never mind. We'll try that later. Looks like we got a glitch here with the StreamYard software. Anyway, why don't we talk about the value of ancient Gnosticism and why it's relevant today? Scott, just out of curiosity, have you changed your mind about any issues, or how do you see Gnosticism stack up philosophically against other spiritual paths? And more important, as we've discussed this before, why is it even relevant today? I mean, it's just some dead mystics who got their asses kicked in history.
Well, I've spent the last 32 years thinking about this ever since I had my Gnosis experience. And I was not given the truth, if you will, on a silver platter. I was left uncertain what I was supposed to do with this. So I've traveled the world with Sandra. I've benefited from my son Chris's input. He's studying to be a member of the Gnostic clergy. And I've tried to bring my critical thinking from business journalism to analyze a lot of seemingly unrelated things like psychology, medicine. I've covered the paranormal, comparative religion. And we've had a chance to experience religions in many other countries. And what I decided is that Gnosticism has absolutely no competition for the accuracy of its description of reality in the basic concepts. But it's about 2,000 years old, and so we do need to update it with a little bit of science. So I wanted to mention something that has been evolving since I published the book. I do have a blog on this for people who want to look up the footnotes. if you go to godreconsider.com and click on the Facebook discussion link, the 10th blog is Big Questions Religions Ignore. And I don't think classical Gnosticism has answered some of these because they didn't know, for example, about evolution. There is now increasingly, since I published the book, evidence of unintelligent design and evolution. I mean, it was 600 million years long. Certainly no entities or aliens were coaching it along. It was quite possible that evolution occurred just at the cellular level. There's a lot of evidence for cellular intelligence, but you could call the collective intelligence at that level the demiurge, or you could say that there were entities, and I believe there were, who tried to intervene at various points. This explains a lot of things that the ancient Gnostics didn't know about. For example, they knew that Jehovah declared creation very good. They didn't know that 99% of all species have gone extinct. They knew of the tragedy of childhood death, but they didn't know what we know now, which is 25% of the 100 billion people who have been born died in childhood. So that kind of throws out the window this mainstream religious notion that we're here for spiritual purposes. As Heller, Bishop Stefan Heller of Ecclesia Gnostica, which is my church, has said, every mainstream religion blames humans for the fact that there's so much tragedy in life. Only Gnosticism says it's not the creatures, it's the creators. And when you look at the conventional explanations for all the tragedy in the world, the unnecessary suffering, you know, it's blamed on free will or karma. You really wonder what earthquakes and COVID have to do with that. Or a common response is, well, we learn from adversity. Yes, if you were molested or you survived the Holocaust, maybe you got something positive out of it. The worst explanations are the New Age one. It's all good. We just don't know God's plan. God needed the experience, in which case he really is Jehovah or Satan. And the dumbest one of all, it's all an illusion. So the reason I am emphasizing this is I think if we accept the idea of entities guiding the process of evolution, it solves a lot of things. David Waltham's Lucky Planet says, and I think he does a good argument here. He says, yes, there are 88 billion estimated planets that might be habitable, but every part of the process of evolution took millions of years, and you can't link all these together and come out with humans with just based on accident. I think the myth of Sophia depicts an effort to pursue forbidden knowledge, perhaps an experiment at creating life in a dimension where it is very difficult for spirits to operate. And we can kind of see that because there's very little supernatural intervention by the forces of good or evil. And I think this intervention is what triggered evolution. It would explain, if it was an accident, why it's been so bloody. The rare intervention of the good guys and the bad guys would be explained. As I like to say, it's not just the UFOs that don't land on the White House lawn. It's Virgin Mary. She hasn't been around for a while, but occasionally she pops up. It would also explain inequality. You know, I don't think we can say that everybody who suffers from 7,000, some of the 7,000 genetic diseases deserves it. It explains the universal chaos, you know, hurricanes, volcanoes. It's not all part of a plan. It's not due to karma. Now, from our 21st century perch in this ivory tower, you know, we can't really appreciate the fact that history was mostly a bunch of illiterate people who were barely surviving. They didn't have a lot of time to pursue spiritual stuff. And today, you could say, you know, that a third of our lives are spent in sleeping. A third of our lives we're either commuting to work, working, or studying for subjects that, let's say, engineering, that don't seem to have a lot of application to an afterlife. And the other third, we're on social media, we're shopping, eating, taking care of the yard, you know, all the other distractions. So there's a Gnostic argument there that we are being intentionally distracted. It's we're not put here because we're destined to, because, you know, we're on our 25th life to gain some good karma. The good news about all this is the Gnostics were ultimately optimistic. There is an afterlife. The mystery religions, which Gnostic was one, said that once you get it, once you get that enlightenment, you no longer have a fear of death. And I've discussed this with Heller, and he agrees that everybody survives into afterlife, but they go into different levels of consciousness. It's kind of a self-sorting process, and there's a chance to advance in the afterlife too. So that's kind of what I've learned since 2014 when the book came out, kind of the core idea.
Awesome. Yes, I think we are in a prison planet, Philip K. Dick world, whatever you want to call it, the Matrix, the Black Iron Prison, Mithra's Abode, if Jason Reza Jorjani's listening, whatever you want to call it. And I always liked this blogger. He was talking about the parallels between Gnosticism and the Lovecraft mythos, and they are a lot of parallels, but he said, most religions ask, how can evil come into the how could evil come into the world? Gnosticism asks, how can good come into the world? So it's that rescue operation of Sophia that it really stressed, regardless of how bad you see the world. And what about you, David? Was, like you said, the issues of iniquity satisfied you and sent you. Do you feel we are trapped in a sort of a simulation? Do you have a softer view of this world, more towards the Valentinians and the Hermeticists, or more like the Sethians?
I personally consider myself more in line with the Sethians than the Valentinians, because the way I see it, this world is filled with so much evil and, you know, unintelligent design, the Holocaust, disease, like all manners of unspeakable stuff. And I think Sethianism comes the closest compared to other, and also Manichaeanism as well, comes the closest at explaining it. Valentinianism, like, does kind of explain it, like, oh, this world was created by a flawed creator. But I feel they kind of take a more softer approach to make it more approachable to people. Because, I mean, even back then, people were like, the world is so beautiful, how can you think this is an evil creation? And I think the Valentinians offered, and other Gnostics, offered a way of somewhat of a compromise so they can accept it, but also not be completely put off by it. Then that's my opinion. And also the idea of karma, which exists in almost all Eastern religions, has a lot of logical flaws. I think, as Scott explained in his fabulous book, so, I think the core problem we face is not capitalism, patriarchy, religious fundamentalism, disease, global warming, you know. I actually thought about this a long time ago. The core problem is existence itself, like physical existence.
Yes.
Because existence is the source of all these things. All those things I've mentioned is a byproduct of existence, not something that came separately from existence. And so existence itself is the central problem. And I think Gnosticism offers a way of answering that and saying, look, yet existence is fundamentally flawed and will probably always be flawed. And there's there's only limited things we can do, and it offers hope of a world of light, a perfect world where many of these problems don't exist, and actually gives hope and joy that other religions don't really give in the same manner. Other religions would either say, well, this world is actually good, you can't see it, it's unknown, it's a mystery. Or this world will become good, but we're not going to explain how or why. So that's my opinion on it.
I think that's really well said. And yeah, I would definitely agree. And yeah, for those in the chat, let me say, all hail Yog-Sothoth. I'm covering all my bases with the gods these days, especially, you know, if the Gnostics would wear gems of Michael and other demiurges to keep the bad guys away, I'm just going to say, Yog-Sothoth, please don't show up to my house today. But yeah, and it should be mentioned too, as we are, you know, we're the three of us were talking about, yeah, the fallen state of this existence and the demented creator and all that. And you, David, mentioned the Manichaeans. There is an incredible joy in their writings. I mean, the Manichaeans are so happy. They did hymns. They were artists. The Cathars, the Sethians in Alexandria, they were really admired. They were known as the good people. It's not like they were around like Johnny Rotten breaking cars and flipping off the queen or something like that. There's a joy in finding out this truth. It's like I tell people, so the greatest news I ever got was when I finally accepted that I was an alcoholic. That meant I was destroyed. I was a mess. The world I'd created around me was chaos. But now I could, what do they say? How do you know you've hit rock bottom? You stop digging. Now I could start going to the light. In Gnosticism, it says, look, only till you accept how fallen this world is can you do something to fix it. If not, you're just sort of, well, jacking off in the wind or something. That's the way it is.
Amen. So, amen.
Amen. Yeah, amen. Yeah. But so far, hey, we've gone half an hour without a disagreement or fight, Scott. This could be a record.
I'll start one. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, sooner or later, you're going to play the demiurge. Awesome, awesome. Well, I got another question so we can get into sex. But anything on your end, Vance, comment or question from the audience, the meat sacks and the hylix and the nomadics down there?
Oh, yeah. We got a couple of questions. And, you know, all of a sudden it occurred to me, the beginning of the universe. What would happen if we took a bunch of monkeys and gave them the capability to make stuff?
The dinosaurs are so, yeah, dinosaurs are so boring. Let's go with monkeys with tools this time.
Yeah, I like what David said about, you know, existence, you know, is inherently, you know, flawed. But, you know, the problem is that infinite existence has to contain all possibilities. So one of the possibilities is flaws. So it's, you know, you can't have existence. Well, let's put it this way. If you had an existence that was totally good and light and wonderful, and there's no conflict, I think it would bore itself to death, I think. And then eventually, you know, if you had separate entities, they'd all wish each other away and there'd be one left and then they'd be bored. So that's kind of my quick take on it. So,
yeah, yeah, I mean, that's what Jung said. God has a shadow. He's God's shadow is the Old Testament.
Yep, so. And we are his shadows too.
All right. He is Sophia's shadow, and then she becomes his shadow as she tries to thwart him, you know, remind him. So yeah.
Yeah, because hey, you know, Sophia, you know, created well her consort. Well, you know, possibilities. There was great with the consort, great without the consort. You know, you got to have both sides. Otherwise, you know, the all-knowing God wouldn't know what it's like for something to create without it. Right. Of course, you know, it's kind of a funny thing. Talk about illusions. You can't really create anything without the consort because the all encompassing one, everything's made of it anyway. So, and everything that happens is because of it. So really it's a matter of relative consciousness and all that stuff. But Jason Chambers had a question. Do the Gnostics talk about reincarnation? Of course, we know that they do. If it is so possible to have a planet of Buddhas, like all karma is paid and everyone is good. Hey, I didn't just talk about that, didn't I? So what's the gang who wants to answer that one? Planet of Buddhas.
We could, Yeah, let's go with the Buddhists. I don't know, Scott, the reincarnation, we've beaten that. Yep. Or we can touch upon it later. We've talked a lot about reincarnation.
Yeah, let's not go back to my debate with John Munter and repeat everything I said.
See Scott and John Munter. They both very balanced and full view of reincarnation from all sides.
I have a chapter in my book on Buddhism, and as fabulous as the Dalai Lama is, there are many, many philosophical problems with Buddhism. First of all, they don't really believe that there's an enduring spirit or soul. One of the great Buddhist scholars said, it's basically a magnetized karma that goes from life to life. And that can be easily disproven with the new evidence about near-death experiences. The problem, as I've explained before, with any kind of concept of karma is back to what I just said about the chaos of the universe. And, you know, we're really isolated from reality. You know, if you think that coming into this world is part of spiritual progress, you know very little about human history and prehistory. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that a third of Europe was died from the Black Plague. You know, Jehovah was busy issuing his 600 commandments and forgot to mention that there were germs, you know.
He didn't tell him to wear masks. And
or maybe it was Moses' fault. It was in that first set of commandments that he threw away, you know. In any event, the bottom line is, you know, you could say Buddhism is the best alternative, and you can make comparisons with Mahayana Buddhism and so forth. But ultimately, in my long search for truth, I had problems with it, both Hinduism, which I'm closer to. I have a long relationship. I've been to India. But I found all of them wanting in serious ways in comparison with what I would broadly call a Gnostic path. And we can get into a definition of Gnosis in our discussion here as to which groups might belong to that. But yeah, I was disappointed in Buddhism.
Yeah, and can certainly talk about that. Yeah, I guess now moving on to the Gnostic sects, and maybe we should bring up Marcion and the Marcionites. And I think sometimes people forget that the Gnostics were out there and they were a direct threat to the Orthodox Church. Mm-hmm. I mean, Church Father said Simon Magus was the father of all heresies, the font of evil and magic and all that. But Marcion was a big deal because he was part of the church, and he was the first Christian to decide that the Christian theology should be codified and that there should be a Bible, a measuring stick. So he brought the letters of Paul and Luke, not without since he thought Jesus just came from the sky, didn't have the birth narrative. And he said, this is it. And Marcion was sort of like, Mitt Romney or Donald Trump. He basically bought himself to become a bishop. He just funded his own campaign up the church, but his ideas were too radical for the church and they kicked him out. And of course, his ideas was his one of his main radical ideas was the two God theology, in which he said there were two gods. Now, he didn't have the idea of the Sethians, of a demented demiurge, Yaldabaoth, or the Valentinians was sort of a Platonic, nice, but still ignorant demiurge. He simply said the God of the Old Testament is a just God, but he is for the Jews. He's picked the Jews, and all these nations have their own God, but there is a supreme higher God. But I don't know if you could say he's Gnostic, because after all, with Marcion, we humans didn't even have a divine spark. This, through a sort of predestination, Augustine predestination, this supreme God might go to some people and send an avatar like Jesus and say, you have a chance to become, to go up to the Pleroma if we pick you and you listen to me. He didn't have an idea of Sophia, divine feminine. He didn't have an idea of Gnosis.
And even then, it's very unfair because we have absolutely not one writing for Marcion, even though he scared also the shit out of the church in those early times, mm-hmm. and they hated him. But what do you think, Scott? I don't know if I could call Marcion Gnostic without some more evidence.
Well, first of all, before we get into Marcion, let's back up a minute, because the idea that he didn't have Gnosis, I think, is due to the fact that we've gotten this idea that it's a mystical experience and it's you're part of God and connected to God and so forth. And I think this is a little kind of confusing. First of all, I had two dramatic mystical experiences. And when I joined Heller's church, he kept saying, don't expect a mystical experience. It's more likely to come from gradual enlightenment. And, you know, and I started thinking, gee, human beings really haven't fundamentally changed in 2000 years. Why should we not be having so many mystical experiences? But sure enough, when I started talking with people, not a lot of people in the Gnostic movement seem to have that. When I started reading April de Koninck's fabulous The Gnostic New Age, which incidentally does show the positive side of Gnosticism, she was talking about this dramatic gnosis connection with the divine and everything in the case of very, very small groups. Remember, most of the mass movements, not just the Marcionite Church, which filled the entire Roman Empire. People don't really realize that. And it lasted until the 8th century in northern Greece. It was by far the greatest threat to the emerging Roman Catholic Church of anything ever in Christianity. In fact, it was so well organized and so efficient that the Roman Catholic Church literally copied every part of its organization, except for that little footnote about women should be priests, because Marcion believed in the equality of women.
And it should be mentioned, the church hated Paul they had to appropriate him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is another point. Amazingly enough, de Koninck says, hey, if you really read Paul closely, he's very Gnostic. In fact, she goes further than most scholars, and she would say some of the letters that people don't think he wrote actually were legitimate. But then, you know, there's Elaine Pagels, the Gnostic Paul. Valentinus said he received his legacy from a disciple of Paul. Whatever you think about Paul, his impact on Christianity of all types was extraordinary. He was basically responsible for the New Testament. The scholars I've read have said if it wasn't for Marcion, that Paul would have been left out of the New Testament entirely. But there's something else I want to go back to on this idea that he didn't have Gnosis. When you look at the mass movements, they didn't have individual Gnosis. It's not really just Marcion. The Manichees, the Cathars, the Valentinians, they would emphasize esoteric knowledge, whether it was transmitted one-on-one or it was transmitted the same way that Marcion spread his gospel, which was preaching. Remember, everybody was illiterate. We don't have diaries from the average peasant who was a Marcionite or a Manichaean, okay? They didn't have videos, you know. Basically, what did they teach? Well, they taught the esoteric knowledge of the two gods. We can quibble because all the Gnostic groups disagreed with each other on the details. Many of them did believe in predestination, which I don't think is correct, but the bottom line is that when you get down to it, the most important step to getting out of the prison is to recognizing it is a prison. God didn't create the prison, the high God. Once you recognize that the creator is flawed and that we are being trapped, then once that opens your eyes, you can't shut your eyes. Once that gets in your head that God is not benevolent, God is not all good, that is the most radical, revolutionary, subversive idea in religious history. And that's what Marcion had. But he had other things that are related to the Gnostics, which you'll recognize. He was apocalyptic, like most of them were. He pointed out that the God of the Old Testament could not be omniscient because he was walking in Eden trying to find Adam, for example. He believed the world was created by what he called the archons. You referred to the docetic body, the kind of illusory body. He believed in that. His ideas about prayer were kind of similar to the direct connection with God, in that God the Father will hear our prayers. We don't believe in Advaita Vedanta. I know some of the Gnostics thought only their souls would survive into the afterlife and so forth. But we're not part of God literally with no personal identity. So if you accept the idea that prayer to the Father can be answered, maybe with the help of Jesus, that is a kind of connection there. But most important is something that April de Koninck points out and Heller points out. The ecstasy, the mystical experience, did not occur individually in ancient times. He said, as Heller has said, it's not do it yourself. The indwelling spark must be awakened by saving knowledge that comes from without. And by without, he meant somebody like Jesus, the rituals which de Koninck emphasizes of baptism, the casalamentum, the Eucharist, the ritual meals with the Cathars and so forth. It was in a ritual context that people really kind of got that mystical experience. And today's Gnostics really, we're scattered. Now, where there are some online things that you can access. De Koninck, in her book, details a lot of the rituals. And for that matter, you can go to a Roman Catholic service, you can get the Gnostic text for it, and just kind of go along with it, because one of the founders of the Theosophical Society said that he could see psychic energy rising at a Catholic service. So the last thing I just want to say about Marcion, because I think he's really been underappreciated, I don't know if Gnosticism would have survived without, he built an incredible number of churches. The oldest Christian church that still has an inscription, 318 in Damascus, is a Marcionite church. And one other little tidbit I got from this book by E.T. Blackman, Marcion and His Influence, Franz Kafka headed a revival of the Marcionite church in Prague around the turn of the century. Now, what lessons does it have? Number one, they went out of business because they were celibate. Don't set up a celibate church. The positive thing is, be a missionary, be organized. As de Koninck said, they had assemblies, they were organized. We're too libertarian and independent, and we don't realize the value of community, which is really what Inner Sanctum is about.
Well said indeed. And yeah, I think Heller really talked, you still have to have an experience. I know Gnostics is an ecstatic religion, but of course ecstasy doesn't mean you've got your eyeballs up your head and it's spread out, but it is still an altering of your consciousness.
Heller would say that's what the Eucharist is supposed to be.
If that works for you, yes, you can have an experience with it. Yeah, no doubt about it. It's alchemy, spiritual alchemy. So, and David, what about you? What do you have to say about Marcion or Gnosis or the experience of Gnosis?
Right. A lot to go through, the Marcion Church and Gnosis.
The chair is yours. The floor is yours, my friend.
Right. The Marcion Church expanded greatly within Marcion's lifetime, becoming a major rival to the emerging Catholic Church, as Scott said. After his death, it retained its following and survived Christian controversy and imperial disapproval for several centuries. A fun fact, even Islamic writers in the 10th century wrote of the Mass Unites. The 10th century Muslim biographer, I'm going to butcher the name, Ibn Nadim, goes so far as to claim that the Mass Unites are numerous and that they're practiced openly, like the Manichaeans. States of the Mass Unites taught two principles, good and evil. Justice is a third principle between the two. It should be noted, by the Islamic time, the mainstream church already persecuted and suppressed the Mass Unites, turning them to only, you know, not a gigantic size. The Muslims at the time viewed Mass Unites very negatively, even more so than mainstream Christianity, because it attributed creation, the world, to an evil god, which they would see as blasphemous because they would see it as blasphemy against Allah. And also denied the Old Testament prophets, which, you know, Islam is would be totally against, since Islam claims descent from the Old Testament prophets like Moses, Noah, Abraham, so on. I think the Mass Unite Church grew because they solved the problem of evil, as stated before, and rejected the problematic nature of the Old Testament, because it's got incompatible with, you know, the true God, like Jesus, like teachings of love, kindness, forgiveness. And also, I don't think Scott mentioned this, but the Mass Unites were apparently, if the church fathers are to be believed, were the most rigid of ascetics, abstaining from marriage, wine, and they also rejoiced beyond all other sects in the number of their martyrs, interestingly enough. I think the decline of the Mass Unites was, again, due to the growing power and influence of the mainstream Christian church, which persecuted and suppressed the Mass Unites. Unfortunately, little is known of Mass Unite practice and some specifics of of Mass's theology, so it's really hard to say if he was really a Gnostic or if he was some sort of pseudo-Gnostic or something, particularly concerning salvation, since it's hard to say whether he believed in salvation through Gnosis or not. My theory is they could have had a very similar practice to the later Cathars, which Cathars show that, like, a strong influence from the Mass Unites, where a specific ritual, like the Consolamentum, which granted the Holy Spirit to descend on the person, and which grants them a divine understanding and a divine knowledge, or gnosis. So it may have been something like that. What else? I think even if Marcion wasn't a Gnostic, I think he was still a very wise and influential man who modern Gnostics can learn from. I think he is to Gnosticism what Clement of Alexandria or Origen are to Orthodox Christianity. Clement and Origen had many unorthodox beliefs, but they're still respected in the mainstream church for being wise men. That in the same way, Marcion can still be acknowledged as a wise and educated man, despite not being a fully Gnostic. And concerning the Gnosis, I'm going to have to disagree with Scott here. I see Gnosis as being chiefly from experience, like a mystical experience, because that's what distinguished it from faith. And doctrines. I think even Valentinus had a vision. I think I'm going to quote. Valentinus on this, on his mystical vision. I saw a newborn child and questioned it to find out who it was. and the child answered me saying, I am the Word. So it seems to me that Gnosis was widely, as a mystical experience, was widely accepted. I think what may cause misunderstanding is that the word Gnosis, because I think what's got to keep in mind is, like, back in the day, Gnosis just meant knowledge, like intellect. It can be any type of knowledge, intellectual knowledge, experimental knowledge, you know. So I think that may cause a misunderstanding between, yes, the Gnostics preach a secret knowledge, like an oral knowledge that's passed down, but they also preach another type of knowledge that one can attain by learning from the oral knowledge, which can be attained. And I think the teaching about faith and Gnosis at the heart of this dispute between the Gnostics and the Orthodox, particularly Irenaeus. The Gnostic criticized Irenaeus' rigid emphasis on dogma and pistis alone, you know, faith alone, at the expense of Gnosis. In their view, Irenaeus' Christianity was unspiritual and offered only the lower psychic level of salvation, where they themselves attained the higher mnemonic salvation, and they used Paul's mystical experience. I think much like all Gnostics who like believed in Paul used Paul as an example of attaining mystical knowledge or gnosis, because Paul had a mystical experience of Gnosis, and they seem to use that as an example, and how Gnosis is clearly distinct from faith and doctrines.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what I have to say about it.
I think that's well said, and thank you very much. Well, for those of you who are joining us, the chat room is bustling. I don't know if is Nate still around, because he's cracking me up with his jokes today. He's got it going. But we have Scott Smith and David Hyatt Bickle to discuss the relevance of Gnosticism today. I think we've already hit on some good points. I think I'm going to try my share screen. As it works, just for a little housekeeping. Share. Okay. Do you guys see this? Just in case, the merch store is going very well. We're going to actually soon add a shirt that says Not Today Archons. But for those of you interested, we got some good Aeon Bide merch. I need to get one of these. What are they? I call them wife beaters. My wife gets angry. I think you call them tank tops more politically correct terms. But you've got different iterations of Aeon Bide. Heresy shouldn't be this much fun. Inner Sanctum. Whole bunch of Sophia stuff, simping for Sophia. So if you get a chance and you want to give your local pastor or mullah or Orthodox rabbi a gift, this is the perfect place to get it. So thought I'd share that with you. The other thing I wanted to talk about, some of you have said, you want just a good private RSS feed, something you can put in your podcast provider. You're not too worried about the archives or the Inner Sanctum group and all that. So with the podcast provider Red Circle, and I know this is really long, so I'll have it on the show notes. We have a new private RSS feed. It's cheaper than AB Prime or Patreon, and all you get is a RSS feed you could put on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and you'll get the last 100 shows or so on your feed. Again, it's really easy. Sometimes a lot of you tell me, well, Patreon's too complicated. I hate it. AB Prime too. There's too much. This is easy. You'll get a link, put it on your podcast provider, and bang, you'll get Aeon Bide full shows fed to you. Also, too, on the all RSS feeds, there is a choice if you want a tip. It's just a link at the bottom of the description. So anybody wants to support there through Stripe, again, there's always so many bases you want to cover. Someone said, well, I only use Stripe online. I will not use PayPal, or I will not use this. So now we have Stripe if you want a tip in the show notes on any of the podcast feeds. So just getting all this Heilig stuff out. But again, please support independent thinkers and writers, researchers like Scott and other podcasters. This is the golden era of alternative media. They're trying to shut us off, but we're hitting them fast, and we're bringing them alternatives and wider, deeper dimensions to the reality that the powers of be have tried to constrain us in for so long. Whew. All right. Vance, any questions from the audience or yourself or comments?
Well, I wanted to comment on Gnosis. Here's some things that came to me about Gnosis. Many of the listeners know that I have had mystical experiences, so here's my experience. I think Gnosis is really a sense. It's not the knowledge itself. It's the fountain that spews the water out, not the fountain. And when I get things that I consider, you know, Gnosis as opposed to ordinary knowledge, there's a kind of light or love or something. It's similar to like when you love someone, that kind of lit up feeling you get inside. And I associate that with something that's coming from beyond the ordinary. And it's a form of beauty too. So I think the ancient Gnostics had, I think it's endemic in all human beings. The ancient Gnostics had that too, but it's not all encompassing. When you get a piece of knowledge, it doesn't explain everything all at once. So people like Marcion, for example, he was important because he did have Gnosis that the Old Testament didn't represent the real God. You know, I mean, that's pretty much all he did, right? I mean, he says, let's throw the Old Testament out. Let's dig all the Old Testament stuff out of the New Testament. And he made a purified New Testament. But he didn't have all the other stuff, the cosmology, the cosmogony, and all that stuff. So, another thing, finally, about, there was some discussion about God in the chat room. And it's so common for us to talk about God as just a giant human being with a similar experience of being as we have. But that quickly falls apart if you think about it. So, you know, we all know about Genesis and the Yahweh not saying, where are they? You know, I can't see him. Where are you hiding? You know, he's like supposed to be omniscient. Well, what the hell? You know, well, that means that either it's not the real God, right? Or it's a very limited God that, you know, has the same kinds of limitations. Maybe he's a little more superpowered. So that's my comments. And Jason Chambers had another question. He's wondering, in essence, since the Gnostics went to church, a lot of the Gnostics, of course, they didn't call themselves Gnostics back then. I think one group, what was the Sethians, maybe had that, but nobody else did. But the people that were, you know, practicing or recipients of Gnosis didn't go to church all the time. How did they figure out which ones would come and which on a Sunday and which ones wouldn't come? He was wondering, and, you know, did they do this with Christ, you know, because the different conceptions of Christ, some the Gnostics believe that, you know, Christ was not really physically present, you know, the, what's the term, you know what I mean, he wasn't real, he didn't experience suffering.
Docetic,
thank you, yeah, and what was Thomas the Master, not Jesus, and so forth. So he's wondering if that was an issue back then. Does anybody know about the ancient Gnostics and how they decided who to attend church this Sunday and who?
Well, I think what he's talking about is, I think in Alexandria, and because again, the Gnostics were the inheritors along with the Hermetics of the ancient Egyptian mysteries. So you had sort of a Hierophant and the Sycophants who learned, and he would guide him through, or she would guide him, if it was Mary Magdalene, through the mysteries, and how to see the world philosophically and ascend up to the archons, and then these rituals came about. But I think he's talking about Marcus the Magician in southern France, in Lyons, because he was the one who had the ritual of drawing lots and switching. Everybody would switch, and of course, his church was actually women. So one week a woman would be the bishop and Marcus himself might be the altar boy or whatever. And then they would just all switch. It was very, I don't want to call it democratic, very Vegas.
Egalitarian or something.
Yeah, yeah. We're just going to switch places. So.
Yeah, it could be.
Scott, David, anything on this?
Well, the Valentinians initially infiltrated, you know, what were the churches. There was no Catholic church right then, but, and they would pick out people they thought would be receptive to the allegorical interpretation of the scriptures. And they would kind of build this secret group within the congregations. Ultimately, they got kicked out. They made their own churches, but you know, the thing about the Gnostics is they welcomed everybody. You know, it wasn't like, you know, show us your baptismal certificate at the door. We won't let you in. Gnosticism by its nature is secret. You know, if you're not open to any of the facets of it, then you're not going to be receptive. You're blind walking in. And I think that the kind of people who would attend a heretical church would be the more open-minded thinkers who weren't satisfied with the emerging Catholic church. And, you know, the Marcionite churches were, and the Valentinian churches were around for a long time. Constantine banned them, incidentally, no more buildings for the heretics. So that kind of, limited what they could do, but, you know, they met in other places and so forth. But, I don't think there was a whole lot of, in any of these Gnostic movements, a whole lot of concern about, you know, whether somebody had been fully initiated and so forth. I don't know. I'm not a scholar, but, you know, there's certainly the biggest problem we have is that so many of the records, were destroyed, like of the Cathars. I mean, we basically have the testimony from torture, you know? And so there's a lot we don't know about the average Gnostic and how these, you know, the Catholic Church did a good job of suppression and destruction and kind of rewriting history.
And there you have it, my beloved True Seekers. The first part of our AB Live was Scott Smith and David Hyatt Bickle. Let's get into some Cathar and Manichaean lore now. As a bonus for patrons and AB Prime members, as I mentioned in the intro, I'll include our interview with Mark Gaffney, author of Gnostic Secrets of the Nassenes. Along with the Ophites and other groups, the Nassenes were part of the serpent-worshipping Gnostic sects. We delve into the mysticism of the dangerous serpent worshippers, understanding how their forbidden message is relevant today as well. A truly mind-blowing interview. Yes, heresy is really so much damn fun. Including the audio version, this is a cool listen if you leverage the private RSS feed from AB Prime or Patreon that works in the podcast provider of your choice. And yes, you can also now get a simple private RSS feed through Red Circle for less than $5 a month. Check it out on the show notes. So please become an AB Prime member or patron or Red Circle subscriber for the full audio interview, as well as the bonus, and all to support this Red Bill cafeteria. Go to thegodabovegod.com for means to assist and get the infernal rewards. Or just message my ass. Whether it's Patreon or AB Prime member or Red Circle, it will cost you about $1 per episode. That's a deal of many lifetimes. The alternative spirituality and philosophy of the Gnostics and the Hermetics is more important than ever. Might be the only way to counteract the nutsack grip Yaldi Baldi has placed on the collective consciousness of humanity. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being yourself, your true self, here in the desert of the real. Hello and goodbye, as always.